Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives, so please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
In Denver, Colorado, Jamie Sanchez obeyed the Lord's call and opened the Drip Cafe to create jobs to help unhoused people get back on their feet. Of course, the LGBTQ community began persecuting him for his Christian beliefs. His inspiring story of standing boldly for God's truth in the face of great opposition is part of our Impact series, and we'll send you the DVD as our thanks for your gift to AFA. Visit afa.net/spiritualwar. afa.net/spiritualwar.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 15th, and you all know what that means. Today is tax day. Is anybody celebrating? Not so much. And this is exactly the day that Trump hopefully should be focused on telling the American people what he is going to do to reduce the tax burden for the average tax filer, because we have all just gone through tax season. And for the average person, it's either a ton of work doing their own individual taxes, or they have to pay someone, sometimes a lot of money, to help them file. And so what really can be done and what steps should be taken to lighten the tax filing burden on hardworking Americans? Well, Pete Sepp, who is the president of the National Taxpayers Union, joins us now this morning to discuss. So good morning, Pete. And can I say happy tax day? I don't even think that's really like a thing. That seems very counterintuitive. But nonetheless, happy tax day.
Well, thank you. President Trump spoke of Liberation Day when he levied tariffs on a number of countries. Maybe this is really Liberation Day, because you end up filing your taxes. Some people have started way earlier, but this is the day it's due. Unfortunately, you go through, as a taxpayer, tax filing day every day, even if you don't know it. The record-keeping burdens, the strategizing you might do with your financial planner, the consequences you might think of when you buy a house, sell a house, when you take a different job, even when you have a family. Taxes factor into it, and so they're with us year-round.
Yeah, that is a really good point, especially for people who are on, you know, who run their own businesses or independent contractors and so forth. Like, I wasn't aware until I was an independent contractor for a while, as far as some of those deadlines that you actually have to, you know, it's not just a once a year filing. It's like a once a month, or at minimum once a quarter, in terms of actually sending money to the IRS. And then, you know, will you get it back if you overgave it to them? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's just, it's such a racket, honestly, in so many ways, that it's so complex that the average person, even the average tax professional, finds it, you know, very difficult to navigate. And yet it seems like Congress really hasn't cared about this as much, because they want to generate revenue so that they can go and spend on all kinds of things that aren't actually helping the American people. So realistically, though, when President Trump is looking at lightening the tax burden for Americans, what does that actually mean tangibly?
Yes, there really are the long game and the short game when it comes to this whole question. The short game is making sure we prevent a $4 trillion plus tax increase. That will happen unless we extend the 2017 tax cut law that President Trump signed way back then. Now, if we want to talk about the long game, then we're thinking about, well, do we transition this whole system to something like a flat rate income tax, or replace it with a national retail sales tax? Those questions are going to have to wait for the more urgent matter, which is making sure that those 2017 provisions are extended. I'm talking about the child tax credit. That was $2,000 under the 2017 law. It will revert back to just $1,000 if we don't extend it. There were across the board tax rate reductions. Those will expire, and suddenly families will find themselves in a 25% bracket when they were in a 15 or a 20% bracket. That can't happen. That's going to be a huge tax increase. A bottom line, a typical middle-class family could face a tax increase of between $2,000 and $3,000 unless we act on this tax relief and make sure it's extended before this year is out.
Wow. And I'm talking with Pete Sepp, the president of the National Taxpayers Union. And I think a lot of listeners aren't really aware of this. I mean, we talk about a lot of other things in the mainstream media and the news cycle and all of this, but aren't really aware about how this might affect them if this isn't passed. Is this something, to your knowledge, that Congress is even contemplating? I mean, they are set to pass this big spending bill this week, but it seems like they're more focused on spending than actually helping relieve the burden for American taxpayers.
Fortunately, there is some good news. The budget resolution that Congress has been working on, both the House and the Senate, have different approaches to it, but both are saying our budget resolution, our framework, is going to have to include extension of the 2017 taxpayer relief law. So great. Very glad that's moving forward. The thing is, Congress has a habit of bickering over small details and not getting the job done until the very last minute. That would be economically a terrible thing to do right now. There's a lot of uncertainty out there among small and large businesses, among families who are trying to figure out, well, how do we plan our finances and make sure we're taken care of in the year ahead? There's a lot of anxiety over inflation still. There's anxiety over interest rates. Some of that anxiety can be taken away if Congress and the president work together to extend these taxpayer relief provisions and say, look, whatever else is coming down the road, you don't have to worry about a way, way bigger tax bill.
Yes, absolutely. And I think some of those immediate reliefs would be very welcome. And, you know, you mentioned as well that some of the longer term things that might need to be the long game instead of some of these key provisions of the 2017 tax cuts that could be more immediate. We do need to focus on, though, especially over the next 4 years and hopefully accomplishing some of that. But realistically, when you look at the special interests in Washington, you look at how Congress, even on the Republican side, I mean, I think this is a uniparty problem that they want to overspend. And so DOGE is making a lot of suggestions, but are we really going to get a lot of cuts? Maybe. But when we're looking at kind of that longer term, is it even realistic, and how would that be accomplished to implement something like a flat tax or even a national sales tax instead of this very mired, complicated income tax? I mean, it just seems like that would be such a difficult shift, but maybe it's a little less complicated than, you know, somebody like me who isn't a tax professional would think.
Yeah, it's true that the biggest problems with our tax system happened in one fell swoop. The income tax was enacted through the 16th Amendment to the Constitution early in the 20th century. Now, other problems, though, have just been creeping up on us incrementally. Our most recent study of tax complexity shows Americans spent a total of 7.1 billion hours and $465 billion just to comply with the federal tax system. Those burdens didn't happen overnight. Just year after year, the gradual passing of laws and rulemakings, deductions, credits, clawbacks added to the tax system has created that complexity. We need to undo it incrementally, and we have a number of recommendations in our study, starting with what we call a quadrennial simplification process. Every 4 years, private and public sector volunteers sit down, go through the tax code line by line and start striking provisions that no longer make sense, that conflict with each other, that are economically unproductive. Have Congress vote to get those out all in one block under a privileged resolution. We'll start making progress towards simplification, and in doing so, we'll get to a flatter tax system, or maybe one where we can just ditch the whole thing and look at a retail sales tax. States are doing that now. They've used that method, and the federal government can too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the federal government certainly can be more modernized and more efficient. And I think that's one of the points that the Trump administration is underscoring for Americans by having this level of transparency through DOGE. But in terms of, I mean, not just the IRS, but certainly the IRS needs to kind of come into, you know, the new century and into 2025 because the IRS, but also other federal agencies, like listeners are very well aware, because I ranted about this a while ago, that when I was contacting the Department of Education regarding, you know, I still have outstanding student loans from law school, like a lot of, unfortunately, you know, adults do, even decades after graduating, they had no ability to email me anything. And I had to literally go and pay money, pay $7 to send them a fax, because I haven't faxed anything since like the 1990s. And yes, they had no ability to provide any sort of customer service. But I think this is the problem. The government doesn't see me as a customer. They see me maybe as a constituent, but really more as just a number and someone who is required to comply, almost like a probationary sort of status, you know, that you would think of in terms of government viewpoint. And that mentality really should change.
Yeah, it should. And the government's attitude in so many cases is, we can't do that. You're crazy. Go away. You bother us. Oh, but don't forget to write your check before you leave. And we can't allow that anymore, especially at a place like the IRS. You know, we have demanded that whoever is in charge at the IRS, Republican or Democratic commissioner, doesn't matter, but there needs to be a detailed plan for modernizing this agency, a punch list to achieve that plan, and an oversight body to make sure that the IRS is staying on track. I mean, when we learned just last week that when DOGE went to the IRS and said, you know, the login button for the IRS's website really should be in the upper right-hand corner, the way most people expect it to be, rather than at the bottom in the middle, they were told, well, we can do that, but it'll take us until July. DOGE showed them how they could do that in about half a day. Those are the kinds of frustrating technological roadblocks in government that people are tired of seeing time after time. No more excuses. It can be done.
Yes, and it seems very simplistic. But again, if this were a company that was for profit, that needed to generate its own revenue, not just take from the American people, they would have to modernize, because they would want customers, they would want it to be accessible and consumer friendly, but they just really don't have any incentives. And so in just the last minute or so I have with you, Pete Sepp, and I appreciate your time on this because I find it fascinating, and hopefully listeners who feel the pain of the IRS understand why we're talking about it this morning. What practical steps, I mean, like who is actually doing this in terms of looking at all these things instead of just saying, well, this is what should happen? Who in D.C. is actually trying to accomplish this?
Well, certainly National Taxpayers Union, the group I lead, has a detailed roadmap for the IRS to modernize, to have better customer service, to respect taxpayer rights, to set up appeals and judicial processes that allow taxpayers to be heard. When working with the National Taxpayer Advocates Office, that's an IRS office, and other oversight bodies, along with Congress, we can achieve this. There's bipartisan legislation in Congress to help clean things up at the IRS. We're all going to get together and try and do it this year. We can't afford to wait another year.
Absolutely. And so where is that legislation in Congress? Where is it at this stage?
It's called the Taxpayer Assistance and Service Act. It has been drafted in the Senate Finance Committee, and we hope to see it reported to the floor shortly.
Excellent. Well, we will keep our eye on that and have you back on, Pete Sepp, to discuss. Really appreciate your time this morning, Pete Sepp, president of the National Taxpayers Union. And you can follow them on X at NTU for National Taxpayers Union. And that's enough about Tax Day. We'll get to some other things right after this on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of legislation that is making its way through Congress, the SAVE Act is making headlines, including this one from NPR. It says, will the SAVE Act make it harder for married women to vote? We ask legal experts. So they allege here in this, and you know, an NPR, of course, I think should be completely defunded. It's obviously a leftist biased outlet. It's not just serving the public by reporting the news without bias, but really, you know, no one does. But this goes on to say that as the SAVE Act heads to the Senate, there's been a growing debate on how the bill may affect voting for millions of married women, particularly those who have changed their last name. If it becomes law, the legislation looks to make sweeping reforms on voter registration. And it was introduced in response, according to NPR, right, to fears about voter fraud through research, though research has consistently showed that since such incidents are exceedingly rare and not a significant factor in American elections. So does NPR really not care that we should have voter ID and that we should secure our elections? I mean, that seems like something that should be very nonpartisan, should be very NPR if it was doing its job. But let's ask a Representative Marlon Stutzman from the great state of Indiana. And he joins me now. So, Representative Stutzman, talk about the truth about the SAVE Act, because I see a lot of fear-mongering like this in the media. And, you know, I'm not a married woman, but I can imagine that if I changed my last name, I would have no problem proving my citizenship. This just seems utterly ridiculous.
Well, good morning, Jenna. I hope you're having a blessed Holy Week. Yes, you know, this is just common sense. I just have to chuckle at the Democrats and the left on how they're trying to throw such a fit over this and fear-mongering and scaring and trying to confuse people about election law. And let's just boil it down real quick. Like, do we just want citizens of the United States to vote in our elections? I mean, that's the basic question. So I would think that everybody would say yes to that. Actually, probably some that don't. And we know there's some that don't because they would love to manipulate the elections by allowing illegals to vote in them. That's why we've had an open border under the Biden administration for the last 4 years. But okay, beyond that, I mean, my wife, when we got married, she had to go to the clerk's office in our county and got her driver's license changed, got her name changed. She added Stutzman to her last name. And we have never had a problem or a question about her last name. You know, those are things that we all have to deal with in life on a lot of things, banking records, you know, if you want to travel on airlines or driver's licenses, all those things. So there is no threat here whatsoever. You do just have to make sure that if there is a name change, that you get that filed correctly. But more importantly, and this is what the left doesn't want to talk about in the SAVE Act, is that there's a requirement to the states to start cleaning the voter rolls and getting names off that aren't voting. And that's really important. A good friend of mine, Pastor Lorenzo Sewell from Detroit, he prayed at President Trump's inauguration. Amazing guy. But he is an advocate for the voters in Detroit, where he said over 50,000 votes were stolen because people wanted to go vote, found out that they had already voted. So somebody's stealing profiles to go vote, and he's trying to get an investigation into that. So again, this is just a bunch of fear-mongering, and the bottom line is we only want citizens to vote in the United States elections.
And that seems so straightforward, and that really should be the issue. But there is so much fear-mongering because then we end up talking about and correcting the lies that are pushed by the mainstream media instead of actually advancing what the bill does. And that's the main issue that I have with all of the mainstream media. And I think that they are intentionally trying to fearmonger a specific category, right, of especially of women who historically have tended to vote more liberal and Democrat, which is, of course, you know, the single unmarried woman. So to say, oh, look, you know, this is, if I were going to get married, then this would take away my right to vote and, you know, go feminism, all this stuff. And so I see that as sort of a latent backdrop to this. And so where is this situated as we're coming to the Senate with the posture of the Republicans, their understanding what this is really about?
Yeah. Well, you know, it passed the House. We had several Democrats vote for it. I think four, maybe. So not a lot of support.
A
but
few.
There are four.
And, okay.
Yeah. And I think what you have to do is you even have to take those four. And more than likely, there are others in the Democrat Party in the House that would agree with it. But because it's political and they're in the minority, they're going to play politics with it because Jenna, I mean, this is all about 2026 at this point because they want to win the House back because then we're going to fall back under investigations of President Trump, impeachment of President Trump. I mean, Trump derangement syndrome is alive and well in the House of Representatives Democrat Party. And so that's what this is all about. They're already ginning up those who are their targeted voters in women, as you mentioned, that that Republicans are trying to take away their right to vote. They're taking away their right to choose or to right to have an abortion. You know, that's their target. So I just think, again, we're already back to the political games. They're fear mongering. The Senate, I think you'll see, will pass it. This is a top priority for Republicans because we know that the Democrat Party, starting with the border, was keeping, this is all about political elections for the Democrats. It has been for decades now, and they want to make sure that they have every one of their, you know, targeted voters afraid and going to be showing up to vote in the 2026 election. But I think the Senate will get it done.
Well, that's really encouraging. I hope that the Senate will get it done as well. And for those listening, please call your senators and ask them to pass the SAVE Act. This is something certainly that should be supported. And I want to ask you as well about some legislation that's going through the Finance Committee, and it will hopefully be introduced this week concurrently, I think, with where we're at with the spending bill. But in the last segment, I had on the president of the National Taxpayers Union. It's Happy Tax Day. And we were talking about how there are, you know, some provisions that if Congress doesn't act to lock in some key provisions of 2017 into tax cuts, there may be a higher tax burden for Americans. Is this something overall that Congress is aware of and working on as we're looking at the broader scope of how President Trump is trying ultimately to reduce the tax burden on Americans?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I would say, Jenna, that for President Trump, I mean, the border and our military readiness, those are the two of his top issues. But right after that, and some days even more importantly, is because, you know, President Trump came in to office in 2017 and they did a Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And those tax cuts, they lowered the income rates for all Americans. They increased the exemptions and deductions. And so that expires at the end of this year, the end of 2025. And so we have this year to either make them permanent or extend them again, which I would be all for, not just a short-term extension, but like at least a five-year extension. But if we do nothing, the American people will see the largest tax increase in American history. And so that, again, you know, I was just thinking this morning as I was talking to some folks, you know, the whole tariff discussion and where the economy is at. The economy is tough. I was talking to a friend yesterday who he has some interest down in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and he's very dependent on tourism. He said that this is one of the worst starts that he's seen in a long time because people are tapped out and they're not seeing economic growth. They're not seeing, I mean, they're seeing wage growth, but they're seeing the cost of life going through the roof, whether it's their utility bills, whether it's their insurance bills, whether it's their health care costs, whether it's the cost of groceries. This is all from a Biden administration over the last 4 years where inflation has gone through the roof. I don't want to see costs go up for anybody, but President Trump is doing the right thing by resetting the global stage on manufacturing, on agriculture, on trade with tariffs. And is there a good time to do it? Not at this point, because we're facing some serious consequences if we don't do anything. And so I see President Trump resetting the stage for America's economy to flourish again, which we have known for a long time that it has just continued to slow down while we build other countries' economies. So this tax cut is really keeping the tax rates. It's not a tax cut necessarily. It's just extending the tax rates at where they're currently are at and not letting them go back up is really important to the economy.
Absolutely. And continuing that, but then continuing to build on that as well. And I'm speaking with Representative Marlon Stutzman from Indiana, Indiana's 3rd Congressional District. You can follow him at Rep Stutzman on X. I'd encourage you to do that. And also on Instagram and Facebook, get all of your news from him. You should all be following all of our members of Congress just to see, you know, what's going on. He always posts some really good information. You have a great team over there. And this whole idea, though, of the economy in tandem with tariffs and tax cuts and the whole thing. I mean, I see President Trump hopefully having, you know, kind of this broader view of saying it's not just about one thing. I think the mainstream media would like to parse it out and say, well, this is what he's doing on tariffs, but he doesn't have a plan over here. But there is a comprehensive strategy, and especially with what we saw in the first term, how the economy up until 2020 was booming. People were excited. There was momentum. Do you think we can get back to that level of excitement, I guess, among hardworking Americans that really want to see our dollar go further?
You know, and I believe that's President Trump's whole strategy. That is his whole goal. You know, Made in America has suffered for several decades now. And I believe that, you know, President Trump's goal is to make Made in America great again and to bring it back. It needs a comeback. You know, being from the Midwest, watching our manufacturing sector slowly die. I mean, the old tool and die shops, those used to be prevalent all across the Midwest. They're gone. Manufacturing facilities are struggling. There's some, you know, automotive, we don't even build cars. The big three don't hardly build any cars anymore. They build sports cars, but they don't build just your traditional, you know, the Taurus or, you know, some of the old car models that used to be around are gone. It's mostly Toyota, Honda, Subaru that are building the cars now. So we've built the Japanese auto industry over time. President Trump is playing chess while Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer are playing Connect Four. And he's already looking at the board, knowing what we've got to do. One of the things that always impressed me about Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, he always prefaces it. All of our conversations, whenever he comes down to the Capitol, that President Trump asked him, job number one is how do we reduce our debt and our deficits without the economy failing? And he's looking at this whole picture through that prism of making sure the economy stays strong. I just saw an article this morning. Ray Dalio, again, is warning, and he's warning over the tariffs, but I think because of the regulations that President Trump is going to pull back that Biden increased, that's also a factor. If you have strong energy policy that is going to increase supply, you pull back the regulations on businesses. I've experienced those personally where it just slows your company down. I think Trump and those tax cuts, again, those three things are going to give the American economy the the IV that it needs to sustain itself, get back on track, because the Democrats have run the country into the ground, and President Trump and his team are going to revive it. And I know the other thing is you can never discount the American people. The American people always rise up and make it work one way or the other.
Yes. And so let's talk in the last few minutes about the spending bill as well, because as we're talking about boosting the economy, lowering the tax burden, you know, all of these things, the spending bill has received kind of mixed reviews, I think, in the media. So what's the truth about this, and what should conservatives understand about it?
Well, great question. You know, the Senate and the House are two different creatures, even though, you know, Republicans are in control of both of them. The two sides are just looking at it differently. And also, we have to look at it from the, the part of the rules that the Senate has versus the rules that the House has. We just need a simple majority in the House. That's a much easier bar to cross. The Senate has all these other rules that they have to work around. That's why we're doing the reconciliation package to get to just a 51-vote threshold rather than, and that way we can avoid Chuck Schumer's filibuster on the 60-vote cloture vote. And so that's a big reason why. Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and other great conservatives voted for the Senate package, and that gives me a lot of confidence that we're all on the same page. There's been a lot of good discussions. Our package in the House, we had $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion in cuts required from our budget. And I think with the other piece, too, Jen, is that the DOGE team is also a big factor here because of all of the savings that they're finding. The concern is, hey, let's not sell ourselves short either because of what Elon Musk and the DOGE team are doing to clean up the government. And so the Senate version starts at $4 billion, and they all tell us, you know what, that's just a starting point. I thought, don't take that number seriously, which I think it's hard to explain. It's like we do need to take all these numbers seriously, but I know that there really is an intention in the Senate to aim for $1.5 trillion in cuts as well. So I think there's a lot of trust that's being built up, and that's where Speaker Mike Johnson, I tell you, that guy is just pulling rabbits out of a hat in the House with a small majority. But we're sticking together for the most part. And also the working relationship that I see that he and Senator John Thune have, they're really building a good, strong conservative working relationship. And, of course, with the Senate or with the president's lead from the White House, we're all pulling and pushing the same direction. You know, sometimes it feels like some are, we're going this direction when we're going that direction. But I know that at the end of the day, I really do have a confidence. I've never seen this. When I was in the Congress 2010 to 2017, never saw this sort of collaboration between the three houses or the two houses and, of course, the White House. So I really feel like we're going the right direction. And the conservatives in the Senate are pulling the same direction that we're pulling as well.
That's really encouraging, Representative Marlon Stutzman, because I think there's so much misinformation and, other criticisms and other things of whether it's Speaker Johnson or the Senate or even President Trump. And so to have, kind of that insider's view, I think can give conservatives a lot of confidence in where we're going. And, it is only April 15th, so we're only a few months into the new administration and this trifecta. So there's a lot of time for a lot more work to be done. So we are very grateful for you and other conservatives and certainly praying for you as you are there on Capitol Hill. And thank you for all of the great work you're doing. So follow Representative Marlon Stutzman on X, Facebook, and Instagram at Rep Stutzman. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Will you take a moment and celebrate life with me? Last year, Preborn helped to rescue over 67,000 babies from abortion. Hi, this is Jenna Ellis, and I want to thank you for your partnership. Think about what you did. 67,000 babies are taking their first breath now because of you. Your $28 sponsored one ultrasound that was given to a woman as she was deciding about the future of her child. Once she saw her precious baby for the first time and heard their sweet heartbeat, her baby's chance at life doubled. But Preborn's mission is not only to rescue babies' lives, but also to lead women to Christ. Last year, Preborn Network clinics saw 8,900 women receive salvation. Your help is crucial to continue their life-saving work. Your caring, tax-deductible donation saves lives, so please be generous. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Your love can save a life.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And as we're still continuing to talk about all things economy, all eyes are on China and the trade relationship, whether or not that will turn better or worse with the United States. And so this headline coming from Fox Business just about an hour ago, China halts Boeing jet orders. Boeing, a top U.S. exporter, was angling to challenge Airbus's dominance in the Chinese market. So the Chinese airlines have been ordered not to take any further deliveries of Boeing aircraft in response to the U.S. imposing 145% tariffs on Chinese goods. This Fox News is quoting Bloomberg News with that report. And so just before 7 a.m. Eastern today, April 15th, Boeing's pre-market share stock price was down 3.72%. So just more collateral consequences of this escalating trade war. And of course, the mainstream news and Politico, for example, these are their types of headlines. Tariff carve-outs underscore weak U.S. position in China trade war. So where are we really at? And what should we expect from the ongoing discussions? Let's welcome in Tho Bishop, who is an editorial and content manager for the Mises Institute. And Tho, let's talk all things China, U.S. tariffs, tariff talk. Not sure that we have the. Oh, and he's breaking up a little bit. We may need to reconnect. So, all right. So I'm being told by Devin and Adam, that my great producers in Tupelo, that we are trying to get Tho Bishop back. And so as soon as he comes back, of course, we will have his econ update, which is far more fascinating than mine. But, you know, this is something I think as we look at some of these headlines, we need to recognize from just a political standpoint that so much of the mainstream media, like we've been talking about throughout this show, that the mainstream media is geared toward fear-mongering. That's just true. And they also, by and large, have a very negative view on Trump, which, of course, everybody knows. But they're taking all of these situations and probably casting it in the most negative light possible to simply reduce Trump's effect and also his political capital, especially heading into the midterms in 2026. And I think that's going to be a really fascinating view on where those issues are shaping up, and also for the state level, though, as well, because there are so many very important races in 2026 on the state level. This is kind of a side tangent while we work to get Tho Bishop back. But one of the things that I've been personally concerned about is several of the states that have gubernatorial races, like here in my home state of Florida, with Governor DeSantis being term limited. In Iowa, Kim Reynolds isn't running again. We have and even Jared Polis in Colorado, who is term limited, which is unfortunately kind of a solidly blue state at the moment. We have a great opportunity there if Christians and conservatives and churches can engage and get involved. We talked about this a little bit yesterday with Steve Dace, but my view of all of this is that we can't just focus on the national news and have the economy, the stock market, all of this unpredictability dictate our politics and dictate how we go and vote for conservative principles, whether or not. I think there's kind of a mixed view of how individual conservatives view what Trump is doing on tariffs and the overall economic plan. But with this, you know, regardless of where we're situated heading into the midterms, the overall goal for conservatives should be to elect more conservatives. Because if we are going to advance and codify any of Trump's major wins, if we're going to reduce the tax burden, if we're going to do actually anything that we've been talking about, I mean, it's well and good and great to strategize, but we have to actually affect that change, and that's going to have to come mainly through Congress. And right now, as Representative Stutzman said in the last segment, he has a lot of faith and confidence in Speaker Johnson and that working relationship with Senate Majority Leader Thune. But I personally would like to see some of those victories, because a lot of this is talk. And a lot of this is we plan, a lot of this is we strategize, but if we're not actually moving forward into some of these significant wins, then it's going to be really difficult moving forward to actually build upon that if we lose any seats, of course, in the House and the Senate, but especially if we don't gain a better majority in the Senate and have that as filibuster proof? Because while Stutzman was talking about, you know, the coalition is by and large going along with the Speaker in the House, the coalition, I think, in the Senate is even a little more tenuous. But we still have, you know, some who are on the Republican side who aren't necessarily conservatives. And that coalition is very difficult to say it very mildly, and so this is difficult as we move forward, and yet there are some wins in terms of Trump saying, you know, let's bring manufacturing back to the United States. This headline actually came out this morning as well, that NVIDIA announces $500 billion investment into the United States. This coming from Town Hall and Katie Pavlik. Artificial intelligence and supercomputer company NVIDIA announced Monday it is opening new factories in the United States for the first time. The White House is deeming the move part of the quote-unquote Trump effect to get companies to onshore their manufacturing. The media lies. Former Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, definitely not a Trump person, claims that revitalizing America's manufacturing base is a pipe dream. Within an hour of that statement, NVIDIA announced that a $500 billion investment plan that would debut the first American-made supercomputer. So not much of a pipe dream. And that's just showing, I think, what we're talking about in this entire segment, that the media is attempting to frame this so that we will have fear, so that we will have concern, and so that we will be distrustful of where our leadership is. And for Christians, we should be very wise. We should be looking at this, not just blindly trusting a leader because he's Republican or conservative, or distrusting someone just because they're a Democrat, right? And often, you know, there are some presumptions there, but it does mean that we need to be wise. We need to be looking at what the plan is, the strategy, being wise in terms of gaining knowledge. But even more than that, we need to be praying for our leaders, because the Bible admonishes us to pray for those who are in authority over us. And even if you are one that didn't vote for Trump, I know that, you know, haters tune into this program and we welcome you, because this may be the only opportunity you hear some of these topics from a biblical worldview perspective. So welcome. We hope that you join us every day. But even if you didn't vote for Trump, or, you know, you're not at all a conservative, their decisions, Trump's decisions, will still impact you. And you should want him to succeed. You should want him to foster a thriving economy, to protect the rights that God, our creator, gave to us, that the government is obligated to preserve and protect. And so even though I didn't vote for Joe Biden, but I wanted him to succeed. He massively failed on basically every level in terms of just conservative policy. But I that wasn't my preference, right? So we need to all at least have the unity of being pro-America. And with that little bit of a rant, I'm told that Tho Bishop is ready. So Tho, are you back with us?
I am, and I think our technical difficulties are appropriate for the topic, because I think the big word when we look at either the trade deals or the larger economic picture is uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the real story in terms of how these negotiations are going to play out around the world, how the ramifications with our trying to reset Chinese policy are, the immediate risks within the stock market and turbulence there. It all comes down to uncertainty and how this process plays out over the coming months.
Yeah, and so with that uncertainty, I mean, I think that fits into exactly you know, what I've been talking about in this segment, that the media is trying to, I think, lean into that uncertainty and that fear by their headlines. And so what should we take away as conservatives to maybe temper that fear with wisdom? You know, certainly not just blindly trusting or being reckless or saying, oh, well, you know, it's Trump, so of course their economy is going to rebound. But really facing this with I think, wisdom and a more grounded view.
Well, I think one thing is to avoid a status quo bias, which I think is the general framing of a lot of the stories, the media headlines about what is going on right now, because the status quo economically was unsustainable. the previous trade regime that Trump is disrupting was not really free trade. Our economic relations with China are not purely organic. A lot of them are the response of Chinese policy and American manufacturers, American companies adopting the Chinese policy, right? You know, the reason why they manufacture a lot of things in China is not because of cheaper labor costs, but rather because of their desire to get access to the Chinese domestic marketplace. In order to get access to those marketplaces, you have to manufacture in China and kind of kiss the ring over there. And so the status quo that is being disrupted is not something that should be defended itself as some sort of economic panacea of free trade and capitalism and yada, yada, yada. And so that does not mean that all disruption is going to be a good thing, right? So that goes to the uncertainty point, is that we've gotten multiple narratives from the Trump administration about what is the desired end result. Is it protectionism and the protection of domestic industry in order to help regrow manufacturing with the support of tariffs? Is it renegotiating trade deals to be more fair across the board? Is it a geopolitical dynamic of trying to exile China? And so, you know, I think there is an area to have grace while this process plays out, just from the nitty gritty of really global politics. But you know, there is outcomes here where the end result ends up worse than what we had before. But there's also paths where it is a better dynamic than it was before, even from people that like trade. And so I think there's a lot of complexity whenever you deal with the global economy as a whole. And what we're seeing is politics and negotiation and diplomacy on the economic side on a massive scale in a way that we really haven't seen, you know, maybe since kind of the Bretton Woods global monetary reset in the 70s. It's the reset of Bretton Woods in the 70s. And so this is a very complex dynamic there. That, again, it could go bad. Like, there needs to be that recognition. It could go bad, but the status quo itself is not something that was worth defending as an outright good.
And I'm talking with Tho Bishop, who's the editorial and content manager for the Mises Institute. And Tho, I wanted to get your take specifically on China as well. And, you know, the story that hopefully you heard in the intro about Boeing and China saying that they're not going to accept, you know, any of Boeing's jets now with the 125% tariffs and all of that. And so we're seeing the collateral consequences of some of this. So where is that element overall in the econ story?
Yeah, well, I expect that you're going to continue to see kind of a tit for tat in terms of deals like this in particular. The more important thing, though, and I think it's with the political story, the Politico story that you mentioned in terms of carve-outs, is, you know, there are still large aspects of the economy that we import that are still reliant upon Chinese supply chains. Again, I'd argue that a lot of those are not because of pure economic factors, but because of deliberate responses to Chinese incentives. And so how quickly can you realign that? Does it mean that all aspects of the supply chain will be or should be relocated to the United States? You know, maybe go to Vietnam, maybe go to India. There's other aspects there. But I think in terms of the Boeing deal, again, you should expect that. You know, the TikTok deal that was talked about early on, you know, I don't expect that happening with the very kind of blunt one-on-one dynamic of disruptions there. But the more important aspect is everything else is the various aspects of the supply chains, with, you know, Apple's reliance upon Chinese manufacturing and assembly of parts, things like that. There's been moves that had already been made for some companies to diversify their supply chains to not be entirely reliant upon China, but that is what makes this very, very difficult. And of course, I mean, an aspect of this is that, you know, these are not simply economic decisions. I think factoring in here, there are national security components, there are things like that. And once you have these additional factors that are not purely economic in nature, that's going to increase costs. You know, you can decide whether those costs are worthwhile or not. But again, this is a very disruptive period. It's going to be a period, I think, marked by continual uncertainty for the near future. And I think the best way of calming that will be getting uncertainty. The best way of trying to mitigate the uncertainty that comes with our relationship with China is to really go out there and reset some of these deals with other countries.
Yeah, well, well said. And Tho Bishop, wish we had more time with you. We'll have to bring you back on for the full segment. But while we can predict uncertainty, so we need to be aware of that. Again, pray for our leaders, pray for the direction of America. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.